Ehi, buonasera, buonasera a tutti quanti. Good evening, Jessica. Welcome, welcome to What the Fuck. Here comes Livia. She's coming on. There we go. There we go. Hi, Livia. Ci siamo? No, she always has this problem. We screw up the intro
Good
all the
evening,
time.
greetings from Finland. How are you? I'm so
Yay!
happy to be here.
Thank you, Jessica. Thank you. Let me give you a little bit of an intro bio while, okay, Livia's getting all set up. A tutti quanti volevo dare una piccola introduzione, piccola piccola su Jessica Haro, ma come sappiamo, tutti quanti già conoscete molto, no, su di lei. È una giornalista, okay, finlandese, che ha lavorato proprio per, diciamo, la stampa, diciamo, il canale nazionale, la YLE, anche autore, ed ecco perché l'abbiamo invitata qui a parlare con noi, che si chiama, il libro si chiama Putin's Trolls. Okay? Lei ha esposto proprio le operazioni dei troll, che sono istituzionalizzati, militarizzati, e facendo così si è messo anche in grave, grave, cioè è stata minacciata anche fisicamente, personalmente, per il suo lavoro. Comunque, tramite il suo lavoro ci fa vedere tutte le tattiche, come, no, loro operano. Ed ecco qui, questo è, diciamo, una piccola, piccola introduzione. Jessica, I want to thank you, okay, for coming to speaking to everyone in our Italian audience, our family here on Liberi Oltre. Our audience, they're looking for facts. They're looking for people who have had real experiences. So this is why we are honored to have you here, okay, with us to talk about your work, your fantastic, fantastic book, Putin's Trolls, but also your experiences. Okay. And I'd like to begin. I know Livia has some questions, but let's start off in a very, let's say, the basic way. Okay. Talking about how operations, no, how do these trolls actually operate? How are they organized? What did you uncover in your investigations? Let's begin with us and back, right? Because you started, Jessica, 2014, 2012. When did you begin?
Definitely. Thank you so much for asking. This is something that really kind of took my life when I started to investigate it back in 2014. I have always been interested in Russia. I have studied there, I have worked there, and I have wanted to keep an eye on it as we are neighbors and we have a long border with them. And we do have some painful experiences in the history of Soviet Union trying to attack us and taking parts of Finland. So many people in Finland are very acutely aware of the threat potential and security problems that Russia pose. And when in 2014 I learned that really brave Russian independent journalists had originally uncovered the so-called troll factory, the social media office in which young adults are being paid to produce pro-Putin comments on social media on an industrial scale. Basically, these are called troll factories because people there just pretend to be opinionated citizens when in fact they are just being paid money to push out Putin's propaganda. And so I wanted to see what kind of impact do they really have in real people.
And Jessica, these were the people who actually work in the troll farms. These are just normal people, or do they look for certain types of people to work in the troll farms?
Yeah, it's super interesting. They are kids in their 20s. They are relatively well paid in at least St. Petersburg scale, so they can get for something like 500, even over 600 euros per month, equivalent, of course, in rubles. And actually, some of them do it for ideological purposes, but it's a minority. So some of them love to put out Putin's propaganda as a profession, but majority just does it for the money. And interestingly, when we went to investigate it further, this was then February 2015, with my colleague and a really good Russian stringer. So we found from Russian web, just from regular job recruitment sites, we found these ads put out by this troll factory in which they were looking for new employees to work there. And they were looking for people who could, for example, be social media managers and even graphic designers. So what they were doing at that time was already memes, videos, and they were operating in 12-hour shifts, also on night shifts. And you know, interestingly, they were looking for people who knew English language. So they were doing international information operations already back in 2015. And only later we learned that they were attacking the US election 2016, pushing, for example, Donald Trump as the president of United States. And that was just one of their many operations.
Just one of them, right? Like they're the one that you and let's say the Russian investigative journalists and the one that you checked out in St. Petersburg, but I'm sure there were many others, right? There were some of them that they tried even to do in the United States. I mean, it's this is sort of, they set up the operation, but there are many locations probably, no, in other areas, okay, as well. How do they get, Jessica, how, the actual messages that they are asked to post, where do those messages come from? Like, where do the narratives come from?
Excellent question. They are given new themes every day. So when in the morning at nine, their morning shift starts, they are given themes to write about. And those themes can be, for example, smearing Russian opposition politicians or writing weird stuff about Americans or it can be any theme, and that ship can be turned super quickly. And these themes, they come from the supervisors. And you know what? Interestingly, in Robert Mueller's investigation, he's the special prosecutor, special investigator who investigated the Russian interference in the US elections. There we learned where do troll factories get material from, and it was from Russian spies who have been first investigating the states, US states' public debates, and which are the most hot topics to influence in order to push Donald Trump as the president and in order to micro-target those troll factory messages to even more like surgically, sensitively, really well chosen target audiences through Facebook, through Twitter. And that's where it gets really nasty.
Yeah.
Jessica, you know what struck me talking on the narratives and also the US election? It struck me in your book that I think it was at the beginning when you talk about Belarus, no? Belarus being patient zero. And it's back in 2006, which means almost 20 years ago, right? So this is how long they had to test the grounds and the strategy. And one thing that struck me in your book that you talk about the death of, I think it's an activist or something like that. And now the death of this activist has been exploited to, to feed conspiracy theories around the activities and the death of this activist to sow doubt and to sow, doubt in the government and in the work of the government, right? And exactly the same thing in 2016 happened with the death of Seth Rich. So there was this guy who worked for the Democratic Convention that was probably because of a robbery, he was in D.C. and he was killed in the street at night. Probably they never knew what happened, probably because was pickpocketing or something like that. And they immediately went in to sow conspiracy theories about Seth Rich being the whistleblower to tip WikiLeaks, with Hillary's emails, right? So, and I, even for me, that, I mean, I'm studying this information, that sounded like a new narrative. But when I read your book, I realized that not even that. So they take advantage of things that happen in reality to twist the narratives. Did that happen also in your case when they were attacking you?
Yes, definitely. And nothing is sacred to them. I have also noticed that they have just no limits whatsoever in their fake news, in their accusations, in their theories. It is just so cynical and beyond disgraceful what they are doing.
Yeah.
And I have, for example, witnessed just smearing of my, for example, past colleague whose Twitter accounts have been searched through after her death. And those messages, her tweets have been compiled together into this just disgusting, just ideological programming troll, you know, hate material. So unfortunately, for example, in my case, I already now know that I won't be let to die alone or die in peace. And these harassment campaigns and criminal campaigns, including, for example, libels, aggravated libels, over 300 filth pieces, fake news articles being published about only one pro-Kremlin fake news site called actually What the Fuck in Finnish MV-lehti. So agitating so many of my own compatriots and even my former friends to attack me and to send me death threats, death wishes. And oh my God, we could just sit here all night long and I would tell you all about it. But they have, for example, also attacked my dead father and used the death of my father against me and my family. They have nothing is sacred to them.
Yeah, nothing.
They have no limits whatsoever.
Yeah, and they only just, it's not just on, let's say, social media platforms in terms of Facebook or Twitter. There's also, I remember reading also in your book about the use and doctoring of videos onto YouTube. You know, they'll stop at nothing. They will stop at absolutely nothing, right? And one good thing that you mention in your book, I don't want to give too much away because I want everybody to go out and get Putin's Trolls. Okay, I zipped through it. I absolutely adored it. Okay. I mean, there were some parts. Oh, no, I'm not kidding you. I'm being really, really sincere here. Okay. I mean, I read some books and I fall asleep, but not with this one. I was like, wow. Okay. So I just said, holy shit. Where was I going with this? I was going somewhere with this.
With the doctored YouTube videos.
Yeah, with the doctored YouTube videos. But there's one case that you talked about, okay, that I'd like you to tell us a bit about. Because one thing that here in Italy we are trying, Livia, me, but there's a lot of, there's a good group of us, we're trying to counter a lot of the Russian narratives that are being totally pipelined into the Italian media, okay. Could you talk to us a little bit and tell us about the case of Inform Napalm? Because they were on the front lines, okay, how they started and then what they did. I think it's an inspirational story. You can talk about as much as you want, okay, about it. But I think it's important to also give our anybody who's watching, you know, like, okay, maybe we could do something like this too, or some sort of spin-off of what they're trying to do. So tell us a little bit about Inform Napalm.
Oh, definitely. I love it that you said it, that you found it inspiring, because so did I. Yeah. They are my favorite people here in the whole
world. They're fantastic. They're fantastic.
Okay. Yes. Please go, everyone, and follow them and become part of Inform Napalm. So, because what they are is a community of volunteers. Started originally in Ukraine by a Ukrainian guy using the pseudonym Roman Burko. So Roman is actually a refugee already since 2014, because he happened to take video of an incident in which Russian special military forces without insignia went to a naval base in Crimea, and he was filming it, and the Russian soldiers wanted to kill him, but instead he ran away, and then he had to run away from Crimea, and then on his way to Kyiv, which was back then still safe, they founded this community of volunteers called Inform Napalm, which actually are seeking the truth of Russia's warfare against Ukraine, as well as trying to gather evidence to put Russia to responsibility and have accountability also in Hague. So they have been exposing Russia and their military activities, as well as Russian security service clandestine operations against Ukraine, but also against other countries ever since 2014. And they have this fantastic website as well as social media sites, and they have been so heavily targeted by Russian state propaganda apparatus and Russian security services. They have been threatened, they have been dosed all the time, their site is under attack all the time. But you know what, these guys, what makes them even more inspirational is that they are also conducting information warfare against the Kremlin.
Yeah, they're like proactive. That's like crazy.
They turn the table.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I like about them, because it's not that they just collect and then expose. They also do operations, which I think is incredible. It's just, that's, you know, because a lot of times we're so passive, right? Or we just talk about this is fake news and that's it. No. They turn it around, okay? And they go on the attack, which I think is brilliant, personally. I'd love to learn how to do that. In fact, I was looking at their site to see the different operations, right, that they're going through. Let me ask you something, Jessica. From your experience of everything from 2014 and 2015 and then going up, right, through the years, 2016, and then, of course, we had Brexit and we had all of this kind of stuff. With the war now, okay, what similarities do you see? But also, what differences do you see? Do you see that there's been any kind of evolution, or something new? I don't know.
Yeah, of course. Back in 2014, as a journalist, it was kind of very difficult to even report what was happening in Ukraine, which I tried to do personally, but there was just so heavy information warfare already at that time that it was just tricky, because there was talk about separatists who are pro-Kremlin and who are taking over these TV stations and administrative buildings in eastern Ukraine, when in fact they were Russian military and Russian security service who were just masked as local separatists. So it was so difficult to just, you know, report the truth. But also at that time it was still secret, so Russia tried to keep it a secret that they were waging war there, and it made it that much more difficult to report. That's why Inform Napalm and the type of people who were really uncovering the truth became super handy at that time. So then also what I was looking for was the Russian trolls, who were actively already at that time internationally pushing for ideas such as it was the USA and NATO and European Union who started this war. Russia is not in Ukraine, and they are not waging war against Ukraine. The Ukraine shut down MH17. So these are the conspiracy theories and false narratives that the trolls were spreading back then already. And they were so heavily trying to portray Ukraine as the aggressor. And they actually, according to my own investigation, when I looked how effective were these trolls, they actually succeeded in manipulating parts of the Finnish public debate. So they were really heavily, really aggressively attacking parts of people who were just trying to use their freedom of speech, real people who were trying to discuss about the Kremlin and Kremlin's policies, and the trolls would attack them personally. First, think about it, it's just so disturbing. So I believe it is coming from, for example, the Russian embassies. They have workers there who probably have the task to monitor what's happening on Twitter, on Facebook, in comment sections of regular news. And then they just find these people who are having conversations, who are criticizing Putin, who are criticizing Putin's policies, and then they direct the trolls to attack them. Or maybe they even run those troll farms from those embassies.
Yeah, well, I suspect that too, Or that there's an operation. Because the embassies, I mean, there's the embassy in London, the embassy in Rome, the embassy,
In the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands, you know. Like, we see a lot of tweets going out, from those, but I think some of the connections, even with the people on the ground, they have to go through. I think it's through the embassy.
May I add two things about the embassy? The crucial role of the embassy as a fire starter in the disinformation campaign leading to the first term, the second term, and the parliament French election. I think that should be studied, the role of the embassies. And there's another thing about the embassies, is that it's not as easy to deplatform embassies. Paradoxically, it has been easier to deplatform Trump than to deplatform embassies. So through this, the invasion of Ukraine, there have been requests and there have been a lot of reports activities, disinformation activities of embassy's account, and there is even proof that they are putting in the pipeline of information and social media fake news, like plain fakes, even not misinformation, but they simply do not deplatform. And in the best case scenario, they will label them, which is definitely not enough. And this leads me to a question I really wanted to ask to Jessica. So what struck me in your book is that you cover a large, a long period of time. You start 2006 Belarus and you work your way out to nowadays. And you have been a target also for so long. So what I was wondering is, on the one hand, what we have learned from Belarus and what we haven't learned yet, and 15 years down the road from 2006, as an investigative journalist busy with tackling Kremlin's disinformation and propaganda structures, do you feel more, let's say, supported and secure now in your work than you were a few years back?
Right. Well, Belarus, it is really quite something, the case that I am describing in the book. It includes the Lithuanian super visionary and brave diplomat called Renatas Juška, who has been really close friend and a mentor, and also someone who has looked after that I have been making the book even when I've had really heavy difficulties. So he became targeted first in Belarus, and it just was continued with attacks coming from Russian security services and these media operations, also in Lithuania, which then ended up in scandals, which ended his career as the ambassador of Budapest, ambassador in Budapest of Lithuania. And what it really taught was that Russia and Belarus have been super actively building these fake news operations and even eavesdropping, so intercepting people's phone calls as early as mid-2000, when the rest of us, we were just like being friends with them. And we wanted to see Putin as someone who is friendly, and who maybe also cultivates free media. No, they were already attacking international diplomats and international organizations and using cooperation of security services and state media, as I describe in my book. And also those trolls, they have been active already prior to those troll factories. Interestingly, a Finnish expert in Russian media, Jukka Mallinen, tells that He had heard from a Russian friend, he has so good networks in Russia, that FSB, the Russian security service, actually paid some money to the FSB school kids, the FSB university kids, for them to go out on social media trashing Russian opposition politicians posing as real people. So this is how early I found some traces of those so-called troll activities. Right. But then about the support as a journalist, how well supported I feel. You know, I do feel more supported now than I did some years ago, as there have been so many court convictions that I've managed to find from the Finnish justice system after filing criminal reports about these programming extremists and criminals who have been attacking me constantly for so many years. So there have been many convictions. And then also, of course, the support that is coming from the audience, almost every day I receive it. So it also carries me in really horrible days, and it has carried me. But yeah, still, there are still these holes all around the society, all around international community, where some of these victims can fall if they are not protected by the justice systems and justice states. So this area just, oh, bless you. So this area just needs
constant. I'm not used to air conditioning. I'm sneezing all the time. It's terrible. Anyway, I should know, because I know that in Italy it's really hot. But here I'm in Toronto and the air conditioning is everywhere and it's like, you know, 20 degrees inside the house. And I'm just, yeah, never mind. That's
greetings to Toronto. Yay! So much. Oh, I love it there.
Yeah. Actually, Jessica, I wanted to ask you, because we have never touched, Lydia and I have never touched on Syria. Did you do any work on the disinformation and what was coming out about Syria or not? Because I'm not sure you have or not.
Very little.
Okay. Yeah. Because it seems like it's all, oh, we have two of Livia's. Oh,
hey, no. I have to mention one site called South Front. I did mention that in one of my articles. And yeah. South Front is a nasty Russian security service operation, which really focuses heavily, for example, in Syria. And it reports about matters that can only be known by Russian security services and Russian military.
Right.
So it must be their operation. When I wrote about it, they also attacked me. And they have also attacked, for example, Elliot Higgins with Bellingcat. So they are multilingual. They are all over the place about Syria.
Yeah. Bellingcat has a long-standing fight with South Front, and it is like banned from American, from American information landscape. Although they managed to penetrate it through, like they have broken down South Front, and they work really closely in the United States with the extreme right and the Trumpian part of the GOP, right? And now what is worrying me is that some South Front-related organizations are being active also in Italy, where we are incredibly permeable to misinformation and disinformation, and the atmosphere is becoming really heavy. We are under, you know, the friendly fire of unwitting Kremlin proxies. Unwitting meaning that they don't do it because they are agents, but they do it just because of ideology or whatever. Just last week, this organization called FIDU, Federazione Italiana Diritti Umani, was attacked by unwitting proxies for their disinformation report, which was like a precise list of what happened on Italian televisions, that fed into the Russian disinformation. And this is like the techniques also that South Front is kind of like feeding also in the Italian information system. Was it South Front active also in Finland when you were being attacked?
I was looking at it, it was 2016. And at that time, they were already producing material in many languages, but not in Finnish. However, I did come through their social media accounts, for example, on Facebook, and I did find Finnish followers. So Finnish followers were reading the English South Front materials and their stupid, overly dramatic videos and animation videos with maps and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
And
really
this
nasty. Nasty.
Exactly. Yeah. So they were also influencing Finns, some Finns, just like these troll operations do.
Yeah. Actually, Jessica, in Finland, did you see, let's say, an increase in, let's say, in far right and radical right parties, right? Let's say after a few years, or was there always a part of Finnish society, let's say that 10%, 15%, that were always radical, always right, no forces? Or do you think it had this impact?
Oh, completely. These pro-Kremlin fake news sites have been building the support base for the most far-right party in Finland, the so-called True Finns, Perussuomalaiset. And they have really fed from the crisis that happened in 2015, after which so many people from Syria and elsewhere came to Europe, also in Finland, and these pro-Kremlin fake news sites were just all over it, and they were just, you can say, weaponizing that topic of immigration and refugees, and they were blaming and labeling all refugees as rapists, terrorists, criminals, as just someone who live with the money of the society and who are a threat to Finland. So that is how they found common ground and built that threatening feeling that is needed in order to have people vote for the party that says that they will protect us from this threat. And that is the far-right party. And interestingly, you know, in Finland, the far-right party, True Finns, they were their most active social online forum. They are just all over sharing this.
It seems like they multiply. They make, like, you know, they multiply. It's incredible.
So they have this weird synergy. We have had true Finns politicians who have given their support publicly to the heads of these types of pro-Kremlin fake news operations. So they are really benefiting for their activities, unfortunately.
Yeah. And they seem to be the same narratives, you know?
Yeah.
From what I guess those are like sort of like the things in our society that we've never actually solved. So they use them, they blow them up. If it's not the Nazis, it's like white replacement or the great replacement, you know, theory that's coming out. That is old. It's old as day. You know what I mean? This stuff is like, and you know, ancient stuff.
Yeah.
But they just latch onto it. They blow it up, you know?
The great replacement theory, I think, I don't know if Jessica is has observed anything on that front. It's the next far right, let's say, how do you say, pièce de résistance for next elections. They are working on the great replacement theory, which is not, what it struck me is that those trolls, this coordinated troll activity has also managed to move certain conspiracy theories, like the great replacement theories that dates back, you know, centuries. It was an anti-Semitic, you know, story that went around Venice in 1700 or something like that. But anyway, so they managed to, the troll factories, they managed to move those kind of fringe conspiracy theories from the outskirts of the web to the mainstream. And so much so that even Italian politician in the Hungarian CPAC, they started like normalizing the idea of the great replacement theory. Are you observing anything on your side, Jessica, on those kind of narratives?
Yes, unfortunately, we have that in Finland too.
Yeah, it's just everywhere.
It's like parsley. You find it everywhere. Yeah. You know, what the fuck? Okay, like these people are everywhere, everywhere. Listen, Jessica, because we don't want to take up a lot of your time. It's late, okay, where you are.
Yeah.
Olivia and I, okay, really want to know what is the best way to deal, okay? Let's talk about what our governments should be doing.
Yeah.
What, let's say, media platforms should be doing.
Yeah.
Because Olivia and I have talked about deplatforming lots of times. And as citizens, what should we do?
Yeah.
I mean, this is
the tool, you know, the toolbox. We need a toolbox for.
We need a toolbox. Like, we want to give our people a toolbox. Okay.
Right.
So, your experience. Yeah.
Definitely. So, at least from a journalist point of view, from my own personal point of view, I want to give everyone the advice that this is the job that these Russian trolls and propagandists have. They are attacking us because it's their job. They have to do it. They get paid for it. They just like, they buy food for their family with the money that they get for writing this shitty, horrible, disgusting smear articles. And I don't know, maybe it helps someone if they think that they just have the shittiest job in the world. Like, I don't know, being a Russian troll in a Western country.
I'm a Russian troll. Can I put that on my CV? I'm a Russian troll.
Yeah, you know, so remember who we are. So we have our Western values. We have, for example, the right to live our own way of life that we have built here with a lot of sweat and tears. And we have fought for these freedoms. And we are entitled to live this way. And there is an attack ongoing by these Russian trolls and propagandists who are, please do not forget, they are directed by Russian security services, who only have the interest of Putin and Putin's filthy rich friends in their mind. So we just have to defend. None of these freedoms come for free. So we just have to fight. Unfortunately, we didn't choose this fight, but we just have to defend. So acceptance, I guess, helps there. Then governments, well, their existence is at stake. So this is a national security threat, these Russian trolls to many countries, as we are witnessing already. And if states want to stay as states, they should find ways to defend through cyber, through all other possible means. And first, they should really realize that this is a war and Russia has been waging it for a long time. And as long as they stay just like, yeah, please bring it on, we don't care, it's just disinformation, no one believes it. And they will soon find that, for example, the moderate politicians won't become elected because the Russian trolls got everyone to vote for the far right and the most fringe, crazy conspiracy theorists as our leaders. And then what was still the third group that you asked? How they should
private defend? Citizens, institutions, and social media platforms.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I have tried everything with them, but only thing that would really help me to sue them, I guess. Because they are just basically enablers, like co-conspirators of these Russian security services, and they're just not protecting the users nearly enough. Like, they let it happen, and ever since the end of this February, they actually have monetized with this material, and probably they still do. And that material is often criminal, you know, it's discriminatory, it's just horrible hate speech. So
yeah,
I don't know what else to do. I have asked them kindly, I have tried, you know, many people have tried to restrict it, but it seems to be really difficult because they have so big lobbying armies everywhere.
Yeah, because then it's a global influence, right, industry. So we're not just talking about social media platforms. You've got lobbyists, you've got PR firms, you have the actual platforms themselves,
You've yeah. got lawyers, you've got, you know, all of the entertainment industry that's behind, yeah. right? Because there's Absolutely. A lot going on in influence, and we need to see this as a global, okay, a global phenomena. And one thing as well, and I think, Jessica, you gave us the sort of the key. The first step is to actually recognize that this is a war, that they use mechanisms and that they use tactics and strategies that stem from warfare. Why is it so difficult for us to actually accept that this is, let's say, a fake news? Or how, let's just put it in a different way. What psychological mechanism do we go through, okay, when we see something and, you know, we sort of fall in the trap, right, of retweeting something, or, you know, why is it so powerful? Why is this disinformation so powerful?
Excellent question. Often, only because it's repeated so many times. For example, these conspiracy theories, they start to feel right and feel familiar because they're just repeated so many times and they just come across on social media in so many different occasions. So there must be something to it because so many people think that and there's that. But then also the fact that many of these are designed to bring up heavy emotions as well as traumatizing. So some of this information warfare material, like media viruses, as Putin's inner circle themselves call them, they are just designed by these, like you said, these security service officers and architects of psychological, Russians say it themselves, it's information psychological warfare.
Exactly.
They are just like
weapons grade. Yes, the weapons-grade psychological nukes, okay, that they're putting into your little brain.
Exactly, right? And on social media,
and it works.
And they can just reach so many audiences and so big amounts of people simultaneously using social media. And just, you know, if we just listened what the Russians were saying themselves, they are openly admitting it. Sergei Shoigu, their defense minister, says it out in the open. We have information warfare troops because we have to send counter propaganda. Then also they are saying, of course, they feel they are the victim. So they say counter propaganda. Of course, they're not the victim. They are the aggressor. So, but they say it out themselves.
Yeah.
Also, Margareta Simonyan, the so-called editor chief in RT, which is Putin's pet project, and she has said it herself already 10 years ago. She said it.
So we're at war.
Why are we still showing RT?
You know what, Jessica? It's crazy that our governments, okay, and our, like, the people that actually talk about this, all right? Like, Levy and I, we always have these what the fuck moments because it's sort of like they look.
Yeah.
It's true. It's like they look. And I sit there and go, this is a military campaign. It's weapons grade. Okay?
Yeah.
Do we want to admit this?
Yeah.
Because if you admit that it stems from the military, that it's used specifically to warp, okay, perception, to detach you from your emotions, your rationale. It's there to do all of these things. If you admit it, that's fine. And then they keep saying, no, but it's not, you know, that they don't like, for some reason, I'm glad that you've said this because it's sometimes we just sit there and we go, take this seriously. They don't take it seriously, right? So it's a big, huge problem.
Yeah, and Russians are laughing at us.
And Russia's the one that, you know, that wins, right, in this situation because, you know, they pop in with all sorts of stuff. Now, I love because Livia just comes in and out. She's got little Kremlin gremlins, okay, in her computer, all right, in her computer. All right, so yeah, I mean, that's the stuff that we have there. I don't know if Livia has something else that she wanted to ask you. Are you working on anything else, Jessica? Something new that'll be coming out soon?
Well, I am all the time giving presentations and training people how to recognize and monitor these operations. So I'm doing that all the time. Then I'm also working with my next book. I don't want to disclose too much, but it's around the same topic.
Okay.
And then I'm also looking after my Putin's Trolls book and its translations in different languages. So I want to recommend everyone the English audiobook of Putin's Trolls has just come out, and I narrated it myself.
Oh,
so
great. Yeah. Is there an Italian version or not?
Not yet. No, yeah. So far Italian publishing houses haven't taken it, but they should really.
Okay. Well, we'll try to find. We'll be pressing. But notice how it's interesting how Italian houses have not. Okay, it's quite interesting. Just like when we were talking to Bill Browder, I think the only language that Bill Browder's book was not translated in was German.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Putin's Trolls will be out in German next month, actually.
Okay.
I
so
feel
we'll try
they
to
must
an Italian publisher. Okay, we need an Italian publisher. So for any Italian publishers listening,
exactly,
this will be a good time, okay, to get in touch, right?
Completely.
Yeah.
I just want to, is there just a moment? I just want to reflect these campaigns against myself just really quickly. Just
yes.
What was in the core and what is in the core of them? Because it's a really threatening phenomenon and it's directed to so many different people, also in Italy, these attacks and campaigns. So these trolls and fake news sites started to smear me as if I was a drug addict, drug dealer,
mm-hmm.
as
yeah.
well as criminal, a threat to Finnish security, as if CIA and or other American and Baltic security services were giving me instructions, as if I was some kind of fake journalist who was just making information warfare
yeah.
myself. Against
yeah.
Finnish people. So these accusations have been just ongoing. Of course, I've been also mentally ill and
yeah.
and crazy and all that.
Yeah.
So
do they call you an alcoholic as well?
Not so much, only drugs. Yeah,
drugs.
It's drugs. Mostly amphetamines and
yeah.
intravenous drugs. They are really yeah. interested in
okay.
portraying that. But then, so
yeah, you look like a druggie. I knew it. As soon as you got on, I said, she looks like a druggie to me. Okay.
So this is what the trolls really, they direct that
yeah.
attention to the messenger. So this, when you asked about how to counter this, how to defend from this, to be prepared that there will be mud and there will be crimes and there will be campaigns and hatred and people who believe in these lies. But you still keep on going and keep on defending your own work, your own values, your own freedoms, your own rights. And
okay. yeah,
just
so
be prepared.
To be organized, yeah, that's one thing that any campaigns, in fact, even no, our good friends at the Federation of Italian Human Rights and fantastic report that they put together, getting out ahead of the message and what will be released is a good idea. Livia and I have talked about this before. So it's always best to have a strategy in place, tactics and a plan in place on how to counter it before you get, right? So it's not just what you want to say, but also what you expect others to attack you, okay?
Yeah.
So basically, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So that'll be that. Okay,
yeah.
Livia, any last questions before we get to our what the fuck moments?
Yes, and exactly. And before I get like again rebooted on StreamYard. So the last thing I wanted to talk about with you, Jessica, is in 2014, which is 2014-2015, which in your book is let's say the core of your book, huh? What happened on the during these years, something happened in the United States, in the gamers community, which is one of the hubs of radicalized Russian disinformation also nowadays. What happened is Gamergate. Gamergate is the first time that misogyny was weaponized to cause, let's say, erosion of trust and to polarize groups of people online in a very effective way, right? And so much so that within Gamergate, at some point, some people close to some of the crucial American figures in the United States that participated to the spreading of QAnon were infiltrated into the Gamer incident. So you have been a target for quite a while.
I'm sorry, I lost you.
We lost you, Livia. She's gone. She'll be back.
All right, yeah.
It happens all the time. We're so professional here, Jessica. Yeah, no, I mean, the Gamergate, did you, oh, here she is. She's back. There we go. She can continue her question. She just asked.
Oh, here.
There we go. Quickly to the question.
Okay, Livia. Quickly to Before the question. You have been. Yeah, you have been, I apologize, I'm somewhere where the connection is really bad. So you have been a target during the same years that Gamergate was taking place. Did you feel and do you feel now that the weaponization of misogyny plays a role in online troll activities and troll strategies and how that works and how that worked for you?
Oh, completely. And I completely relate to that case and I'm familiar with it. And just, you know, for these Russian trolls and propagandists, women are the lowest scum and filth that exists in the world. And they should be said that to, and they should be pointed their place. And anything that these Russian trolls and propagandists would want to love and to just, you know, portray as the best kind of human is just like a middle-aged man who is conservative and who is really foul-mouthed and who is Donald Trump, basically.
Yeah.
And Putin, of course, because he's so manly. He's just so manly.
It's just Mr.
So if you're not Trump or if you're not Putin or if you're not pro-Russian anyone, so then you're just scum, especially if you're a lady. So there's no, yeah. It's just like, yeah.
Yeah, it's tiring. It's just so tiring. I know. Yeah, I think you said it right. It's sort of, it's the, if you're white, male, older, okay, because in Italian politics, it's the same, all right? So it's white, male, older, towing the whole religious, but they're not religious, right? But they're trying to get into that sort of like the Christian traditional values, that kind of thing. That's also being touted now and being brought to the fore much more than it was in the past. But yeah, basically that's it. Everybody else is excluded.
Yes,
and
exactly.
For women, yeah. And women, they hit you hard. They hit you hard, you know? If they're not explaining something to you, Jessica, because you know you're stupid, right? So men need to explain, all right? And I'm saying this because this happens to me every single day. I get all these explanations. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. I'm being a bit facetious tonight. That's it.
I love it.
So Livia, yeah, Livia's back. Okay, Jessica, we have here at What the Fuck, we've got a tradition, okay? All our guests, including the really, like, you know, the Bill Browders, the ones that came all in the suits and everything, they give us what their, okay, did you have a moment this week or maybe last week or maybe even an hour ago where you said, what the fuck, okay? You saw something and you just went,
in a bad way, what the fuck?
Could also be positive. We've never had a positive, but we'll
I did.
It.
I did. I did have a positive once.
A positive. Okay. It can also be positive.
I have just been reading this material about this Havana syndrome and stuff like that. So I haven't been in that state. Yeah, I'm sorry, but maybe you can fill me in.
Yeah, no, I remember reading the Havana stuff about 2 years ago, the reports that were coming out Also, I think from the Austrian embassy, there were a few other areas, but there was also a good friend of ours, of Olga, okay, and I, we haven't, we may actually invite this person here on What the Fuck, but Mark, okay, Palliomeros.
Yeah.
He, you know, oh, you read it too. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. So
yes, please,
really it is, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's a Julia Ioffe story.
Yeah.
A really long one in which the CIA, very high senior, high ranking, like, I don't know, four-star general or I don't know, something like really high up there, Mark, he became targeted by this weird weapon that just destroyed his brains. And it's a much bigger story than just him. There are so many others who have been attacked as well. So,
yeah. No, no, it's incredible.
That's fucked up. That's just
it is. Yeah. Also, because I mean, we're going now. I think a very, very long time ago, I have to look this up, but someone had told me that the same kind of weapon had been used during the Falklands War. Okay. And it was one of the reasons why. And I had, you know, I was trying to find information about it, you know, going back to see when the first these kind of weapons were first used. I'm sure that it's not the first time, like the sonic, there's also like the sonic, they're different, no, different kinds, but this is like crazy stuff, absolutely crazy stuff. It's horrible, absolutely horrible.
Yeah,
horrible.
Yeah,
yeah. Livia, your what the fuck moment.
Okay, got two. Okay, first what the fuck
moment. She's got two.
Yes. First, what a fuck moment. Actually, I was kind of part of it because I was present to the presentation of the disinformation report in Rome at the Camera dei Deputati.
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier, and I saw it unfolding almost from the inside, how the whole, like, how do you say, avalanche of misinformation came into being. So that my first what the fuck moment. So it was completely misrepresented. It's a very valid report. I urge everybody to read it, the Disinformazione sul conflitto russo-ucraino della Federazione Italiana Diritti Umani. It was portrayed in the press. They allowed Il Fatto Quotidiano, which is obviously a Russian proxy, a media outlet in Italy, they allowed it, they allowed the Fatto Quotidiano to state, to establish the narrative, the disinformation narrative on the report. And then there was the friendly fire from this woman, from the PD, the left-wing party, that actually she sent something to the press saying, oh, I'm not part of this. And that was really like, that was really naive, let's put it that way, of the Italian left-wing party, the Democrats. So I urge everybody to go and see for themselves what the report is about. It's really accurate and it's really good work. So let's for once in our toolbox, I would say, let's avoid friendly fire because we are fucked up already as we are, as it when
good.
It comes to disinformation in Italy. Yeah, at least let's not shoot each other. Let's try.
Well said.
To not. Yes. Then the second one is this morning. So I was reading, like I had my reading, like my news from all over the world. And the Jerusalem Post reported that the country, namely Russia, that is accusing Ukrainians to being Nazi is actually ordered the Jewish agency in Russia to stop any operation. So the Jewish agency is kicked out of Russia. There goes all the probably these Nazi accusations to Ukrainians are just like a let's say a projection, let's put it that way. So that was on one hand say, oh, everybody else is a Nazi, we are like the heroes of this of the moment, and then take a course in your government by banning the Jewish agency from the territory. So that was my second what the fuck moment of the week.
Okay. Alrighty. I have to say, I haven't got one. There's probably tons of them around.
Oh my God.
Because I've been busy. I was seeing my family. I was preparing because I had lunch today. Jessica, I had lunch today with Trudeau. With Pierre Trudeau. Pierre Trudeau.
Oh!
With Justin Trudeau. I've also had lunch with Pierre Trudeau. With Justin Trudeau. So I had a fantastic lunch. It was a group of people, but I got to sit at his table. So I was able to bring two things to the table that I wanted to talk to him about, which was Ukraine and more arms to Ukraine, and also about disinformation, okay, as well. So obviously he's already, right? He already knows all this stuff, but I wanted to, you know, bring this message from, you know, different people. I was busy. Okay. I couldn't get on. In fact, I have to finish also my Substack. There's tons of things that I have to do when we get off, but I will next week. No, next week you don't have, right? Yeah. We're not having what the fuck next week.
Are we on next week? Cause we have to, what is it? To next week is the 12th. We don't know. We will let you know if we are on next week.
Hold on. Let me get my schedule here. Yeah. Oh, this is really good.
Yeah, okay. I mean, better than talking trolls? You mean better than talking trolls?
No, next week we better don't have anything. Next week, because I'm traveling next week. On the 19th, everybody, abbiamo la Ruth Ben-Ghiat, okay, che ci parlerà su, okay, la risorgenza dell'autoritarismo e fascismo. All right, so Ruth Ben-Ghiat, I don't know, Jessica, whether you've ever talked with her or anything like that. She's fantastic. She's great. What a wonderful person. So that's on the 19th. Okay, so next week we have off. And I promise I'll bring a what the fuck, okay, to it. But that's about it. All right?
A big one.
So, I'll bring a bigger one.
So Monique, I mean, there's plenty. We should have all these ladies one day, all in one beauty.
Sorry? Livia lasts about three, four minutes. And then she's out. We're used to it. Oh, no, she's back. No. No. No, that's okay. peace and love. Okay, exactly. We're gonna all do like the hand signals. All righty then. Okay, Jessica, we're gonna say goodbye. Okay, and I really, 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 Livia would also, I mean, when she gets back in here, but thank you for coming by. Vorrei a tutti quanti rimettere il titolo del libro di Jessica, Putin's Trolls, ma potete trovare anche tutti i suoi articoli sotto il suo nome, varie testate. È roba veramente, ok, anche perché tutte le sue esperienze, all right, tutte le sue esperienze personali, le sue indagini, e quindi siamo veramente, siamo stati onorati che stasera è venuta a parlare con noi. And that's it. Livia, are you back? No, she's not. All right.
But thank you so much.
We'll just close it up. Okay, we got it. All right.
Thank you. So much fun and interesting and very fascinating topics.
It is the topic. Oh, she's back.
There is Livia. The
There she is.
There we go. Okay, so I throw my idea there now. We should have all these great ladies that we have individually in a big show, all together. We chat with each other, Ruth, Heidi, Jessica, all the great ladies we had on the show.
Yeah.
For a season finale, like the great and the
big bang.
In. You can count me in.
Yes.
And let's do it on nighttime, like at 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Right. We'll get Olga in. We'll get all sorts of people in.
Yeah.
Yes. All righty then. Okay, everybody. So we'll close it now. All right. Before Livia cuts out once again. Once again, thank you, Jessica. Thank you.
Thank you, okay. Guys. It was fantastic. Take
thank
care.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Jessica.
All right. Thank we're you. Ending the broadcast. There we go.